Hey, it's 5:05 on Thursday, March 16th, 2023, from the Sourced Podcast Network in New York City. This is your host, Pocky Wong. Stories in today's episode come from Edwin Kwan in Sydney, Australia, Katie Gregg in Alexandria, Virginia, Katie Craig in San Diego, California, Mark Miller in Boca Raton, Florida, and Marcel Brown in St. Louis, Missouri. Let's get to it.
This is Edwin Kwan from Sydney, Australia. A ransomware group has claimed to have breached Amazon's security camera company, Ring. Ring, however, has said that it does not have any evidence of a breach of its own systems. It is, however, aware of a third party that has experienced a ransomware event. It is unclear at this stage whether the breach was through that third party breach or what data has been compromised. The ransomware group has threatened to release the data and has posted a message saying, "There's always an option to let us leak your data." Ring has said that the compromised vendor does not have access to customer records.
It's no secret that there is a gender gap in the cybersecurity industry. Per a report from Women's Cybersecurity Magazine, women make up 51% of the population, and women hold 25% of cybersecurity jobs in 2022. This is a 5% increase from 2019 research. Even though the numbers have risen, there is still a large gender gap in cybersecurity. Being aware of this gap and the potential to miss out on a huge portion of the population's potential talent pool, on March 13, 2023, CISA announced a formal collaboration with the Girl Scouts with the goal of bridging the gap. However, this isn't the first time we have seen federal entities team up with the Girl Scouts. In 2017, CISA collaborated with the youth group to create 18 cybersecurity badges. In 2021, DHS and CISA partnered with Cyber.org and the Girl Scouts to create the 2021 Girl Scout Cyber Awareness Challenge that was designed to help develop the next generation of diverse cybersecurity talent and strengthen our nation's cybersecurity resilience. Programs and partnerships like these are becoming increasingly important in helping bring in the next generation of talent to not only help close the gender gap, but also make the nation more resilient to future threats. This is Katie Gregg in Alexandria, Virginia.
In a world of ever-evolving digital threats, cybersecurity professionals are no strangers to surprises. But now, with the emergence of GPT-4, the latest iteration of OpenAI's powerful language model, the line between friend and foe has never been blurrier. This is Katie Craig in San Diego, California. GPT-4 is a game changer in the cybersecurity industry because it helps find potential threats and automate vulnerability management in a way that no other tool has. With its remarkable ability to mimic human-like text, it can easily unmask the most devious of phishing emails, making even the slickest cybercriminals sweat. But as the old saying goes, with great power comes great responsibility. Some experts fear that the same prowess could be weaponized, turning GPT-4 into a cunning adversary. The model's impressive skills may enable bad actors to craft increasingly sophisticated phishing attacks, making it harder for the average user to distinguish between legitimate messages and digital deception. Jack Nicholson once said, "The minute that you're not learning, you're dead." Nicholson's words serve as a poignant reminder that as this powerful tool evolves, so too must the experts who work to protect our digital lives. Ultimately, whether GPT-4 is a guardian angel or a devious rogue, the responsibility falls on the cybersecurity community to learn about it and harness its powers wisely. As Jack Nicholson might say, it's time to learn or die in this high-stakes game of cat and mouse. And to those daunted by the challenge, remember, All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, but in the realm of cybersecurity, it might just keep the digital boogeyman at bay. This is Katie Craig. Stay safe out there.
I was having lunch with Alan Schimmel today, catching up because we haven't seen each other for a while. I told him I was working on putting something together, a new podcast series on OSPOs, open source program offices, because it's such a powerful concept, but it's flying below the radar. To my surprise, Alan hadn't heard of it. Now you got to realize, Alan's one of my go-to people when it comes to bouncing ideas off of each other. He's CEO of the TechStrong Group, one of the most easily identified companies in the media industry when it comes to technology news. As a side note, Alan and I do produce the DevSecOps all-day event at RSA Conference each year in San Francisco and Singapore. I figured if Alan hadn't heard of OSPOs, then I'm on the right track. This is Mark Miller, calling in right after lunch in Boca Raton, Florida. My interest in OSPOs came about through various conversations with Nithya Ruff, head of open source program offices at Amazon, Anna Jimenez, the To-Do Group OSPO program manager, and Ashley Wolf, open source director at GitHub. Speaking of Ashley and GitHub, they just released a project to help open source program offices get started. You can find a link to that project in the show notes. As a little background, over 80% of the components in modern software applications are open source. Yeah, really, 80%. As an example, think about that from the financial industry perspective. It came home to me when Wayne Jackson, CEO of Sonatype, told me, if you pulled open source from fintech solutions, the world economy would collapse immediately. Companies need to find a way to manage use of open source, including creating policies for usage, compliance with government and governance requirements, evaluating the security of the components that are being downloaded, and possible snafus in licensing. I'm not sure how they would do that without a formalized open source program office. So, keep an ear out. I'm seriously considering launching a new podcast for our growing network. Let me know if you're interested in a podcast on OSPOs, and I'll put you on the launch list. Now I got to get back to lunch.
This is Marcel Brown, the most trusted name in technology, serving up your technology history for March 16th. March 16th, 1926, Robert Goddard, now considered the father of modern rocketry, successfully launched the world's first liquid-fueled rocket in Auburn, Massachusetts. The rocket reached an altitude of 41 feet in 2 seconds at a speed of about 60 miles per hour. The concept of using liquid fuel allowed the advancement of rocket technology to the point where space travel was made possible. Goddard died in 1945 before his vision of space travel became a reality. However, NASA acknowledged his contributions by naming the Goddard Space Flight Center after him. March 16, 1995, the world's first wiki, WikiWikiWeb, gets its start as Ward Cunningham sends an email inviting people to add and edit content. Cunningham officially launches WikiWikiWeb 9 days later on March 25th. A wiki is a database that can be a community collaboration. Rather than calling his creation QuickWeb, Cunningham said the inspiration for the name Wiki came from the WikiWiki shuttle bus he learned of during a trip to Hawaii, WikiWiki meaning quick or fast in the Hawaiian language. 6 years later, Wikipedia is launched, although Cunningham has no official involvement. March 16, 1999, Mac OS X Server 1.0 is released. This was the first version of Mac OS X available, as the desktop version would not be released until just over a year later, on March 24, 2001. Derived from the Next Step technology that Apple acquired in its purchase of Steve Jobs' company Next, which also brought back Jobs as an advisor and eventually CEO, Mac OS X Server 1.0 is important as history as the first shipping example of what would become the Mac OS X operating system, later called OS X and then Mac OS, which was not only a major advancement for the Apple Macintosh platform, but would also form the basis of Apple's future iOS and iPadOS operating systems. However, this original 1.0 release was fairly rough around the edges and was met with mixed reviews due to various technical limitations and interface oddities due to the not-yet-completed transition from the Next Step interface model. That's your technology history for March 16th. For more, tune in tomorrow and visit my website, thisdayintechhistory.com.
That's it for today's open source and cybersecurity updates. For direct links to all stories and resources mentioned in today's episode, go to 505updates.com, where you can listen to our growing library of over 90 episodes. You can also download the transcript of all episodes for easy reference. 505 is a Sourced Networks production, with updates available Monday through Friday on your favorite audio streaming platform. Just search for It's 505. And please consider subscribing while you're there. Thank you to Edwin Kwan, Katie Gregg, KT Craig, Mark Miller, and Marcel Brown for today's contributions. The executive producer is Mark Miller. The editor and the sound engineer is Poki Huan. Music for today's episode is by Blue Dot Sessions. We use Descript for spoken text editing and Audacity to layer in the soundscapes. The show distribution platform is provided by Captivate.fm. This is Poki Huan. See you tomorrow at 5:05.